There might be moose. Professor Neil Franson?
Nobody here by that name,
the man shouted back. Go away. I'm here to discuss the anomaly. I need to know what you know about it. The response was a bullet that hit off to my side. Pro tip, you don't shoot in front of someone. The ricochet is liable to hit them. Franson apparently knew this pro tip. Would it help if I told you I believe you're right, and I need to know what you know so I can do something about it?
Or you're here to shut me up.
Can we discuss it without shooting?
You got any guns? Drop them.
I squatted down and started disarming myself.
Who's with you?
I was getting tired of all the shouting. Just the guy who drove me from the airport. I swear I'm on your side. I'm one of the good guys. It took a while. I could vaguely see the outline of, presumably, Franson moving around, checking the surroundings. There's paranoid, and there's lunatic fringe. I was going to have to handle this carefully.
Go tell Avik Ming to drive back,
Franson yelled from the front porch.
I'll radio when he needs to pick you up. Might not be long.
Former Professor Neil Franson was short and burly, with iron-gray beard and hair and bright, intelligent, but suspicious blue eyes. He had a rifle trained on my chest as I sat down in the offered chair. The interior of the cabin was cluttered with books and charts. Homey, clearly a single man's domain, but well organized. The charts seemed to mostly be geological data of the surrounding region.
I go by Robert Heinlein's adage that you should always give a man 10 words before you kill him,
Franson said.
You've got 10 words.
I thought about that. It is a dangerous creature that has to be killed.
Repeating what I said isn't going to save your life,
Franson pointed the rifle at my head. Do you know what it is? I do.
I know what I think it is, Franson said. But whenever I've told people what I think it is, they call me crazy. And I've had plenty of people who write books for and about crazy people try to get me to open up. Figure you're one of them.
I don't write books about crazy stuff. Okay, I do write, but it's academic. My job is to kill monsters. Simple as that. You were in New Orleans. Ever hear of Hoodoo Squad?
No. Franson frowned. But maybe it wasn't called that then. You're a monster hunter?
Yes. And the anomaly is what's called an old one. Very bad juju. Which is why I need to know everything you learned about it. If it hatches, the whole world's in for a very bad time.
Why the hell do you think I'm up here?
Franson finally laid the rifle across his lap.
Prove you're a monster hunter and not one of those UFO book writers.
I'll have to take off my coat. I pulled off the layers I was wearing and showed him my scars. I started pointing them out. Loup Garou, vampire, ghoul. That weird one is from some sort of shadow demon. Do I look like a writer?
This thing. You can't kill it.
Franson set his rifle aside and got up to get a bottle of wild turkey.
It's something from beyond time.
They've been killed before. It's generally called a Mava Panavae, Gujarati for worm mother. I believe it is the larval form for an extremely deadly alien species.
No kidding, which is why I'm up here,
Franson said.
Once I figured out that thing was alive and I couldn't get anyone to listen, I headed for the most out-of-the-way area I could move to. This plat is about as stable geologically as you're going to find in the world. I figured that if the thing started moving, there'd be all sorts of crises, and one of them was bound to be geological and sociological. Up here, there's too few people to be a problem.
He might have thought that sounded bad, but it was actually a remarkably optimistic take on what would happen. Old ones meant blood, fire, madness, and then lights out. Did you call the government when you figured it out?
Of course I did,
Franson said angrily.
The minute I put two and two together, they blew me off.
You got the wrong department. This could have been handled well before my time. Thanks, God. Let me start at the beginning. I gave him the standard MHI, the supernatural is real, but there are people who can do something about it, talk. After that, and a lot of wild turkey, he was ready to talk freely.
When we found the anomaly on seismic surveys, it really wasn't looked at as a big thing. How a big cell of rock got dropped under New Orleans was a puzzler, though. Do you understand New Orleans geology?
There's oil under it?
Some,
Franson said.
New Orleans and the surrounding area, most of the Delta region for that matter, is composed of Pleistocene-era loess. There's 30,000 feet of loess silt under New Orleans before you get to Cretaceous limestone bedrock.
Loess is... sorry. Dirt formed from the glaciers grinding rocks and releasing it as dust, right?
Get you a C in my class, Franson said grumpily. Close enough. That dirt, as you say, soil would be a better term, got washed down by the river that's more or less where the Mississippi is over thousands of years during the Pleistocene.
Pleistocene. Mammoths. Ice Age.
Which is when you got continental glaciers,
Franson said.
And most loess formation. That was when most of the Mississippi Delta built up. There's more recent, within the last few thousand years, surface geology. But under that is pretty much undifferentiated silt going down 20 to 30,000 feet. So when we found a gigantic cell of what looked like rock 3,000 feet down, it was a sort of, that's interesting moment.
Generally the best time in science.
Not this time. I wished I'd never gotten involved.
Franson took another drink.
Best hypothesis was an asteroid that somehow came down more or less intact. Bottom line, we got some grants and drilled down to it.
He took another drink.
You gotta understand, core tapping at those depths was sort of in its infancy. We were mostly getting ground-up bits of whatever the hell it was made from. The drill guys kept wearing out heads. What we were getting wasn't making any sense, either. When we hit the hard stuff, it seemed to be organic. So we sent it to the biology lab.
Franson paused and seemed really reluctant to continue. And?
Dr. Catherine Ramos was in charge of analyzing the organic materials. I really liked Catherine. I'd never really dealt with her until we found organics in the anomaly. But working with her was a real charm. We sort of had a thing. Then she started to change.
Get a bit crazy? I asked.
Bit, Franson snorted. By then, we'd penetrated the shell. And it was definitely a shell. Carapace, something. We got up this weird liquid. Gray-green. Just came gushing out of the mud from the pumps. Smelled horrible.
Like dead cattle bloating in the road, mixed with some sort of horrible chemical spill.
So you smelled it? Ever seen a world-class biologist try to analyze it?
No.
Catherine was grounded, sane, totally rational,
the former professor said.
2 days after she got the sample, she was in a nut house. Been there ever since. One of her grad students committed suicide. The rest quit. Drillers got sick. Quit. One of them killed another guy with a wrench over nothing. I was feeling the effects. Anybody who touched those samples went nuts. That's when I realized we'd struck not gold, but pure evil. I shut down the drill and pulled out. I stopped researching geology and started researching theology. That's when I realized we'd struck something that had been biding its time from before time.
And in strange eons, even death may die, I quoted.
Exactly, Franson said. But when I tried to tell people,
they thought you were nuts. Doomsayer prophets tend to get dismissed. One of the issues I'm going to face... I'm sort of surprised, though, that it didn't come to the attention of the right authorities.
Well, if there are right authorities, they certainly screwed this one up. I've managed to keep up with it. Some of my real friends still send me reports. I know they do it just to humor their crazy friend, but they do humor me. The thing hasn't really moved. Slight upward movement, but no real acceleration. Though at the current rate, it will surface in 500 years or so.
Unless it hatches, I said. But like you said, dawn of time stuff, it could hatch in 500 years, or 5 minutes, or 5 million. Really don't know. But it is, yes, just as bad as you think it is. Worse. I thought about it for a few moments. Dr. Franson gave me the time. I need you to come back.
No way in hell, Franson replied. I'm quite comfortable where I'm at, thank you.
You're the expert. The only expert. You want the world to end? Or you want to do something about it?
I'm prepared, Franson shrugged. If people wanted to do something about it, they should have listened when I was telling them back in the 70s.
You're bitter. I get that. You just got ignored and ridiculed. I recently got beat most of the way to death by federal agents. I'm gonna have to go back to those same people, the ones who put me in the fucking hospital, and tell them that they're wrong. Again. That what's down there isn't just some scavenger creature, but a full-on old one. The thing they fear the most, and that I found it when they couldn't. That they missed it. And I'm going to do that one way or another. I'm going to convince them. Because if I don't, the world ends. And there is no prepared, I added. Get over that naive notion. This thing breaks out, there's nowhere on Earth to hide. You can't just hide up here. Not for long.
I'm old, Franson said. You said yourself, it could break out in 5 minutes or 5,000 years. I'll take my chances. Here. Not in New Orleans. Screw you.
Fine. Can I at least get your data? We're gonna have to replicate your drill. You can at least give me what I need to do that. Franson thought about that for a bit, then shrugged.
That you can have. For what good it will do you. You're gonna expose the drillers to this stuff, you know. Again. It's evil.
Ultimate evil, I said. Which is exactly why we have to kill it. Chapter 19. On the way home, I had a layover in my old stomping grounds of Seattle. It was tempting to just go to Sori and get some good sushi, but there was one other avenue of investigation into the Mava that I had not pursued yet. The nightclub was in a bad part of town. It was an ugly brick building with no signage. There was a big metal door, and when you knocked on it, the bouncer looked at you through a slit. The vision slit was about a foot and a half higher than I was tall, which would be your first clue this wasn't a normal club. I knocked and got eyes.
What's password?
The bouncer had a very deep voice. Party, party, all night long, I said, trying not to sigh. Party, little princess, till the break of dawn. Shake your little groove thing, yeah, yeah, yeah. Shake your little groove thing, Princess Shalala.
You got to do the dance, too. Princess says you got to do the dance when you says the password.
I'll slip you $20 if I can skip the dance part. There weren't any witnesses, but I had my pride. Just tell Shalala I did it.
Deal.
I stuck the money through the hole and the door opened. The bouncer was a troll. Trolls make good bouncers. As tough as my friend Decay is, he had nothing on this guy. Shifty bastards, though. He'd probably spend that $20 on porn. At night, there would be human customers and human employees, and the Fey servants would hide, and Shalala would put on a glamour and mingle. But during the day, there were no humans inside. There was movement in the shadows, but any Fey creatures who were here must have smelled that I was a hunter and were hiding.
Princess in her dressing room,
The troll pointed. I knocked on that door, and she yelled for me to come in. She was at a table in front of a mirror, putting makeup on. Shalala wasn't using glamour.
Ugh!
I yelled, turning my face away.
For God's sake, Shalala, glamour or something!
Royal Fae weren't beautiful to humans in their natural form. Quite the opposite. Their actual form was utterly alien, truly different in a horrible and terrifying way. I had no question they were from another dimension or planet. Whatever they were, the Fae weren't sane.
Like, you humans look just as bad to us, Shalala said,
but when I turned back, she was glamored.
I'm all, like, grody all day, surrounded by monkeys, you know. Gross.
And this was why I had not bothered to see if the Fae knew anything. If there was a Fae out there who wasn't insane or an asshole, I had not met them yet.
Like, what now, Chadwick? I'm getting ready to go out.
I was apparently looking into her vanity mirror. She was now illusioned as a naked and beautiful blonde human female.
Yeah, right.
Once you see Fae ugly, it's one of those things makes you wish there was a brain scrub. She might look like a supermodel now, but I could still only see the Fae. We've got a situation.
Again, Shalala said. You had a situation here before. I, like, totally had to save the day for you.
This is a bit different, I said. Are you aware that old ones leave larvae behind on planets?
Shashukanala,
Shalala said, shrugging and continuing to put on makeup. I don't know why she felt the need. The glamour covered it.
Gag me with a spoon, human. Like, everybody knows that. How dumbfaced can you be? They're more like big stupid eggs. The eggs are asleep, like, forever. Since they're totally immortal, until, like, wakey-wakey, and then, boom! I just ate your stupid planet, losers.
What causes them to wakey-wakey?
Usually by, like, food being around, and, like, people being dumb butts and using old one magic, like necromancy and stuff. Depends on how much, like, food and worshippers are around,
Shalala said, shrugging and continuing to trowel on makeup.
Blood sacrifices, whatever.
What if they had, like, a totally very into magic entire city over them? I asked. Shit, fucking insidious fae magic.
With, like, lots of food and plenty of worshippers? Not long, then. We were, like, totally killing them before you humans stole fire. Fae courts always kill them as soon as we find them. Cause they're, like, totally grody. And if they get to adult, they're, like, impossible to kill. Like, you gotta totally kill them when they're young, or sucks to be you.
Wait. She stopped putting on makeup and actually looked at me suspiciously.
Like, how come you're asking?
There's, like, one under New Orleans.
What?
She screamed, her glamour suddenly dropping. Fae ugly again and clearly upset. The makeup goop was clear on the gigantic Fae bug eyes, and it was wrong.
No way! How big is it?
It's like about 200 meters long. Is that bad?
How big is that? What's that in real words? The metric system is lame. Tell me it's little. Like the size of a car?
I don't know, in your terms. Did Fae use the inch pattern? Never checked that at Oxford. But more like the size of a high school football stadium. Including the bleachers.
There's never been one on Earth even close to that big. How did you stupid humies let one grow that big? That's like practically adult.
She screamed again, starting to put her makeup away. She still hadn't re-glamoured. I think she was panicking.
Do you know what one of those does when it grows up? I've got to go. Nice planet you had here. Now we're going to have to find a new one. That's like what we get for letting you stupid primates try to run things.
This thing scared the crap out of a fae princess who could probably level an SRT without breaking a sweat. Don't worry, we're gonna handle it.
What are you doing?
Looking for my suitcase. I've, like, got a pack.
We could use your help. There's a clause in the contract.
Stick the contract up your big dumb butt. Try and enforce it after your planet blows up.
She had the troll escort me out.
Franson had a lot of stuff. Shitloads of stuff. Charts, plats, pages that were just columns of numbers, early computer printouts. I hoped somebody would understand it. I sure as hell didn't. The next question was what to do with it. This wasn't MHI level, this was MCB. But I wasn't even sure SRT could handle it. The last time a Mava was attacked, it wiped out a sepoy regiment. Before that, it was 5,000 crack Chinese soldiers. What did the MCB do in situations like that? Call the DOD? We were going to need some serious firepower. Airstrikes, napalm. If it hatched, Katie, bar the door. We had to at least inform MCB. Seriously inform them, as in formally and full up. Write a report, submit it to D.C. I'd just cost them millions of dollars, so why would they believe evidence I'd gathered from a discredited crackpot? That was going to go over like a lead balloon. It was a long flight back. I pored over what I could understand of all the geology gobbledygook and considered how to kill the thing, preferably without digging up the Superdome. Pump holy water in through the drill? Could you do that? I have a real hard time admitting when I'm in over my head, but as soon as I landed, I had to swallow my pride and call Earl Harbinger for help. Ray Shackelford was the one who made MHI's case concerning the danger posed by the Mava directly to MCB Director Wagner. Even though I was the one who had done most of the research, I stayed in New Orleans. As far as Ray's presentation went, that hunter who had just sued them for millions of dollars didn't exist. Chad who? Sorry, Director, don't know the guy. He sounds like an asshole. Unfortunately, Special Agent Campbell also attended the meeting. His position was that there had not been a KIFO outbreak all summer. In fact, the last time one had been seen had been when Agent Robinson had lost his life. MCB New Orleans' official stance was that the creature had probably gone back to sleep. The idea that it was actually a larval old one was laughably absurd, and any operation sufficient to destroy it would pose too much risk of exposure. We'd done our homework and come up with a plan that would allow us to bring a maximum amount of firepower with a minimal number of witnesses. We simply needed MCB's permission. Oh, and the whole Marine Corps waiting nearby in case things got out of hand would be nice. That was a hard sell. Trying to convince them that the real reason New Orleans was such a supernatural hotspot was because of this entity's true nature, and thus worth the risk to attack it directly, was a harder sell. In the end, Campbell wanted to pass the buck. He was more worried about the very real chance of witnesses than the tiny off chance that the Mava was a world-ender waiting to bloom. New Orleans had been relatively quiet for months. The select committee was off his back, and Director Wagner wanted to keep it that way. They would conduct their own investigation into the threat. Of course, under the new oversight rules, that investigation might take quite some time. Of course, Ray wanted to know what quite some time meant. Sadly, since their recent lawsuit, the MCB was revamping their policy and procedures concerning non-immediate supernatural threat assessments. Once the new policies were in place, then they would investigate this matter accordingly. If things heated up before then, the MCB would reassess the situation. In other words, it was permission denied. Thank you very much, Mr. Shackelford. You can show yourself out. Hoodoo Squad and Team Happy Face had been waiting around the team shack for word from Ray. After he called, everybody who had gotten their hopes up that the MCB would do the right thing for once was pissed. Earl waited for the anger to die down before making an announcement.
As long as that thing is down there, innocent folks are going to keep on dying. Fuck the MCB. There's too much at stake. We're going to put this town right once and for all, even if we have to do it ourselves.
Are you saying what I think you're saying? I asked.
I am. We've made a plan. Now we've got a lot to do to get it ready. Let's get to work.
Chapter 20. All we had to do was put together a big mission, build a team, gather resources, prep a battle space, and do it without the MCB catching wind of it and shutting us down. First step was finding another geologist, preferably one who was read in, or at least wouldn't just assume we were crazy. That turned out to be a very short list, as in none. Luckily, Neil Franson had an attack of conscience. He never said what made him change his mind, but he decided not to sit it out at the ass end of Canada after all. He flew down from Yellowknife, called the number on the business card I had left him from a payphone, and asked to have somebody come pick him up from the airport. "Can you show us where we can get a drill into it?" I asked. I had grabbed Ray, and we were standing around a map of the city.
"Drilling to it will be fairly simple. Drilling through it is the tough part." "Can you pump stuff down into it?" Ray asked. "That's more or less how drilling works," Franson said, smiling slightly. "As you drill, you pump in what is called mud. It's a mixture of various stuff, mostly water and concrete. The concrete hardens the walls of the drill bores so they don't collapse on you, and the water keeps the drill head cooled. The remaining water brings up whatever you're drilling through. Filter that out and reuse the water. What do you intend to pump in? Poison?"
"Something like that. Do we have to drill straight down to it?"
"No," Franson said. "Otherwise we'd have to drill in through the Superdome."
"I could probably arrange that," I said thoughtfully. "And it wouldn't be the worst place to have a knockdown dragout, separated from the surrounding area by parking lots and fences. Better than Bourbon Street." Speaking of knockdown dragout, Harry would probably want to put it on pay-per-view. Probably not the best idea.
"There's no ports. You have to have access to the actual ground. Otherwise, you have to drill through the foundations. No matter how much access you have, they're not going to let you drill through the footings of the Superdome."
"We don't know how quiet it's going to get when we hit it, though. From the historical records, these things tend to react violently."
"The place to do it is a warehouse, then," the geologist said. "You can drill in sideways from one of those. You're still going to have to cut through the floor, but that's easy. There are even some that have already been used for that in the New Orleans area. People get upset when they see drill rigs in their backyard, so you hide them in a warehouse. Common." "Know if there's a big warehouse in the area that's not being used at the moment?" Ray asked me.
"I don't, but I'll call my real estate lady." I met with Madame Courtney in order to buy a warehouse. She ended up having a vision.
"Oh, this is terrible. Terrible. The work is not done. The Loas had their revenge, but only part of their revenge. Alpha and Omega, beginning to end. Only your brothers found us leaving the world was not the end at all. Merely a prelude."
"What?" I was sitting in her office holding a page of industrial real estate listings. She had been sitting behind her desk when the spirits came upon her.
"Can't be, Madame Courtney. It's over. He's dead."
"Nay, it was the Dark Masters who first caused the beast beneath to stir. It was they who accidentally woke its hunger and brought this curse upon the city. You ended them, but you did not end that which they woke.
She pounded her desk for emphasis.
Your work is not done. The true end is before us.
Hold on. The local Khifo eruptions had only been going on for a few years, as far as we knew. The old vampire I'd met at Mardi Gras had made the outside meddling sound like a relatively new phenomenon. Thornton hadn't been selling virgin sacrifices for that long, so the timeline fit. Are you saying that, unbeknownst to my evil idiot brother, something his cult did caused the Mava to activate?
It is so. It was some of their dark rites and spells that the beast felt and reached out for. Fates entwined. You were there at the beginning. Now, you must be there at the end. Trust in the Loas.
Sure. Got it.
Very well. You will bring justice with a flaming sword.
Now,
let us speak of this property the Loas have picked out for you. It has a lot of square footage, is very private, and an excellent value.
So what are the effects going to be?
Captain Rivette asked. With MCB sitting this one out, any official response was going to be up to local authorities. If there was one thing Captain Rivette didn't like besides being around hoodoo, it was taking responsibility for an event. On the other hand, it was clear to SIU that this thing needed to be dealt with. Earl and I paid them a visit. We don't know exactly, I admitted. The only records of previous battles with them are ancient and incomplete. It's going to react, and it's going to raise servants. We're pretty sure that's undead. Could be other Old One entities, if there are any in the area, like Shoggoths.
They're bad, right? Lieutenant Hale said.
Giant black man-eating blobs, Earl said. They don't like fire. Burns them right up. I've fought them before. Just don't let them latch on, because they'll tear you to pieces in seconds. The latching on part is tough, though, on account of its sprouting tentacles at will.
Oh.
The other problem will be the Khifo worms. They're what we used to call the basement boogie. As I said that, most of the cops and deputies blanched. Most of them had not seen one, but were familiar with their handiwork. We anticipate they'll be attacking at our location, but they might break out anywhere that they're already present. They don't like sunlight, though, Lieutenant Bichard pointed out. But you're planning on breaking through at night? If it goes like the historical record, this is going to be bigger than Mardi Gras, I said, shrugging.
You really want thousands of people caught up in this? Earl said. We're planning on initiating around 0300. Most of the street people will have even packed it in by then.
You're worried about witnesses?
No. I'm worried about collateral damage, which is why that night you NOLA boys are going to make up an excuse to evacuate the whole neighborhood around that warehouse for us.
Franson had assumed we would be pumping poison down to the Mava. In a way, he was right. The lamas who had helped interpret the ancient records had all agreed that the mystic unguents of the most perfect would have been merely a carrier for the power of the great lotus, which could be anything imbued with sufficient faith in goodness, light, and purity. Those things were anathema to the old ones. Father Pema had suggested holy water. Lots of holy water. Like tanker trucks full of it. Pro tip. Hunters often use blessed items. Most creatures you'd consider unholy have adverse reactions to them, sometimes violent ones. But it isn't an easy way out. We've seen over and over that religious items are only as strong as the person using them. If their faith wavers, it's basically useless. So if you think you're fighting on the side of the angels, you'd better really believe it, or else. End pro tip. Hunters come from a wide variety of faiths, so theological arguments can get heated, but this religious stuff works if you believe in it hard enough. But even if you are inclined that way, it still takes a lot of juice to actually channel the power of God. Blessing a little basin of water? No problem.
blessing thousands of gallons to use as a weapon against an otherworldly being during a battle that could potentially rage for days? Big problem. Unholy evils always try to get in your head and find weaknesses. Everyone on this mission would come under psychic assault. They'd need spiritual help to survive. So all of us began discreetly calling upon our respective clergy to see who would be willing to help. Franklin had made friends with a local reverend who had dealt with quite a few supernatural problems. Real solid, salt-of-the-earth man. Milo called in some of his Mormon friends. Even though it weirded out the Christians, I invited Madame Courtney and some of her associates to join in. This was, after all, her town. In the end, we had several flavors of Christianity, some Buddhists, Hindus, and hoodoo, Whiteside, obviously, to drive off the seed of evil. 'Cause the saints come marching in. To represent the Catholic Church, I had told my local father confessor and asked for his help, but Earl told me I hadn't needed to. He had made a call because he knew some Catholic guys. A few days later, some Catholic guys showed up at the team shack. From the way they looked, I suspected Earl's call had been long distance direct to Rome. There were a few priests and several extremely physically fit men with Swiss accents and military haircuts. There were records in Oxford originating from the Vatican's Blessed Order of St. Hubert the Protector, one of the oldest monster-hunting organizations in the world. I suspected that these priests were from their secret guard, an order which supposedly no longer existed. Earl introduced me to the senior priest.
"This is Father Madruga and Father Ferguson. Fathers, this is Chad. We call him Iron Hand. Most of what we know about this thing is from his research."
"Nice to meet you."
Madruga was Hispanic, and Ferguson was a redhead nearly as muscular as the Swiss guard. We shook hands.
"I'm glad His Holiness sent you."
"Oh, it's not like that," Ferguson said.
"We are simple priests, merely here to provide whatever aid we can," Madruga said.
He was in his 50s, short, fit, and stocky, broad-shouldered with black hair and eyes and some serious facial scars that looked to be from fire. One eye was milky white and clearly blind.
"Nothing more than simple priests."
"Sure." There was another man with them, not a priest, but not one of the Swiss Guard either, who I won't give much description of, for reasons which will become obvious shortly.
"Who is he?"
"That is Fedele," Father Madruga said.
"When Mr. Harbinger told us what you are potentially dealing with, we asked for him to assist us. He is something of an expert in the field."
Fedele nodded in greeting.
"Hello."
"I didn't know you were Catholic, Earl."
"I ain't. I just like working with professionals. These boys are all right."
"They seem kind of secretive. Fitting, since secret is in the name of their order."
"We do not know what order you speak of," Madruga said.
The priests did not seem comfortable with that getting out.
"It would be best not to share such speculation, my son."
"This way, fathers," Earl said. "We'll go over the plans."
They walked away, but Fedele lingered for a moment.
"So, Mr. Ironhand, I believe we have a mutual friend."
"Who?"
"A nice old fisherman who calls himself Pete." Fedele smiled. "You will certainly be going back to see him again before I do. When you get there, please tell him hello for me."
"Okay." This guy was legit.
"I'll tell Pete hi."
"Thank you."
The holy warrior began walking after the priests, then paused.
"Another favor I must ask. When you write your memoirs, please refrain from writing any specifics about me or record anything noteworthy you may see me do during the upcoming conflict. The secret part of the name is a matter of doctrinal pride."
I'll do that. I kept that promise. But, pro tip, if you ever meet a combat exorcist dispatched by the Vatican, just stay out of his way. Most of the drilling should be pretty standard, I said, pointing to the schematic. It's the last part we have to worry about. Getting the right drill crew had been tough. You couldn't put out an ad for drillers that had experience with hoodoo. It had taken various calls to contacts. Brad from my old team in Seattle was from Oklahoma and knew a couple of good old boys that had experience drilling and the supernatural. Ray had some that he knew had experience with the supernatural, but who chose not to join the cause. Earl knew a couple more. When we told everyone more or less what we'd be doing, they'd all jacked up their hourly. A lot. And every single roughneck had showed up armed to the teeth. The Mava is about 3,000 feet down. From the previous record, the exterior is extremely hard. They went through 3 drill bits drilling through a bare 4 meters of shell.
They get what it was?
Daniel Scott asked. He was a weathered, tough guy who had spent most of his life on offshore oil rigs.
That's some tough shell.
We're dealing with stuff that doesn't really abide by the laws of physics as we understand them, Ray explained. This is beyond anything any of you have dealt with. It's not really amenable to normal analysis. It doesn't make sense to a material scientist because it's not really of this universe. It's really bad for one's sanity, too.
Going crazy when you study them too hard is just one problem, I continued. Upon piercing the shell, you start getting the I-core from this thing. It pretty much drove the last drill crew nuts. Since we're not sure what mechanism that works by, when we get to the shell, we're gonna have to suit up.
And we have to communicate, Ray added.
A lot.
If you're feeling the effects, you're gonna have to back away. We'll be pumping holy water in to destroy it. If that doesn't work, we'll drop back and punt. I'm not losing the drill crew the way they lost the last one.
Explain lose, Al Gordon demanded.
The drill team leader was one of Brad's contacts and had the same cowboy look going as Sam Haven, except he was shorter and heavy set. Some of them went nuts, others ran. One of them killed 2 others with a shovel. Stuff like that, I explained. This is full-on horror movie stuff. If you're feeling weird, just back off and see Father Ferguson, Reverend Hawkins, or the religious authority of your choice. We'll have plenty to choose from. Praying over this stuff actually works if you've got enough faith. If you start feeling consumed with uncontrollable murderous rage, take a break.
That's how Al normally is, Daniel said.
So how will we tell?
The drill crew had a laugh.
How long for the stuff you're using to kill it?
We don't even know if we can kill it, Al. It's our best guess. It's got the volume of the inside of a high school football stadium. If we have to pump it entirely full of holy water, we'll be here for weeks and probably have to reset to drill it at multiple points.
Assuming MHI can afford that,
Al muttered.
We'll run out of lives before my family runs out of money, Ray said. We'll switch people out as we need to. When we hit the shell, we'll start pumping the holy water. Hopefully that should reduce some of the effects. And when we punch through and it hits the internals, we're expecting a large-scale response.
Despite that, we need to keep drilling till we're deep in the interior, I continued. We've got no clue about anatomy, but our best bet is to pump that bitch full of holy water. Ray was assessing the crew while we briefed them, looking for any signs of weakness. These men were tough, but they weren't trained hunters.
Men, I can't accentuate this enough, but we're facing true evil, like nothing you've ever imagined. I can't predict how, but it will attack you, body, mind, and spirit.
Yeah, Gordon said, looking around and shifting a bit in his chair. We didn't ask for enough money on this one.
Shit, Daniel said, shaking his head.
I don't want to lose my soul to the devil.
This thing,
If it breaks out, is the end of the world, I said seriously. Full up Revelations time. Do not pass go, do not collect $200, go right to the apocalypse. Killing it before it hatches is the only way to ensure the safety of the world.
If you've got a problem with any of this, walk away now, Ray warned. There's no shame in knowing when to call it.
None of the drillers left. Last point, I said. We won't be repumping the mud. It's going to be diluted 10-1 with holy water, then dumped.
You check with the EPA on that one?
Gordon asked. We got permits for dumping the mud, I said, shrugging. We can't exactly say it's going to be mixed with the ichor of an unclean thing that has ravaged the human soul since the beginning of time and is just waiting to break free so that it can lay waste to all life on Earth. But if you'd like to submit the paperwork...
Nah,
Gordon said, grinning.
I'm good.
The smells and sights were too familiar. The smell of dead things and vomit and shit and chemicals not meant to exist on this planet. The horrible mucus on every wall, covering the colorful, if crude, drawings of houses and dogs and horses and kittens. The gold stars and decals of Disney characters. This time the Mava had hit a kindergarten classroom. Several children and a teacher had vanished, screaming. Decay and I were the first on scene.
This didn't have to happen, man.
He was right. With our limited resources, it was taking weeks for MHI to set up a mission the MCB could have set up in days, if not hours. We gotta find the symbol here, I said, looking around the destroyed classroom. The floor was tile. I groaned at the thought of having to pull it all up looking for the fungus symbol. The room beyond was a small storage room where the teacher kept all her special materials away from the students. There was a rolling cupboard in the corner filled with pencils, construction paper, and crayons. Pushing it aside, we found the loathsome fungus symbol underneath. Now it's time to get the pig, I said, gritting my teeth. An hour later, the classroom was on fire, another pseudopod was burnt, and Special Agent Campbell was waiting for us in the parking lot. I was still trying to avoid MCB agents as much as possible, but Decay about lost his mind and had to be held back by a couple of other hunters from punching Campbell out.
Kids, Campbell! Decay shouted. He got little kids! How about MCB reassesses the situation now?
The senior MCB agent had nothing to say in reply. Chapter 21 The warehouse was very large and crowded. In the center was the drill rig. I'd seen drill rigs around. Who hasn't? In the news and TV shows and... even just driving through Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Texas. They were big, scaffold-looking things reaching up to the sky. Everybody knew what drill rigs looked like. This wasn't that drill rig. The rig was laid sideways on a trailer. They'd just driven it into the warehouse that way. The pipe, called a string, was held at an angle of about 10 degrees and went into an already cut hole in the thick floor of the warehouse. The rig was laid in about 50 feet from the south wall, and the full string and entry stretched halfway across the 400-foot-long warehouse. To both sides, we had installed giant water tanks. They looked like above-ground swimming pools and even had ladders to climb in. Usually these would refill from the mud pumped out by the drill. But holy water needed pure water, so the diluted mud was being dumped into a storm drain and, at least in part illegally, then dumped into the nearby Mississippi. What would happen when the Mava goop started being pumped out was anyone's guess. Hopefully, just a fish kill. A repeat of Mardi Gras, or worse, would be unpleasant.
North of the tanks were 6 fire trucks manned by volunteers from the New Orleans Fire Department. There hadn't been a lot of tankers on this one. NOFD liked hoodoo about as much as NOPD. But they'd previously lost some men to a Kifo worm, so we'd managed to get enough volunteers. There were lines from the trucks leading up to the roof of the warehouse, as well as more inside. We were planning on throwing around a lot of fire. Having a way to put it out was a good idea. NOFD was willing to run the trucks, which was a specialized job. They weren't willing to run the lines. The lines were going to be in harm's way of hoodoo. Couldn't say I blamed them. In addition to the big tanks, the fire trucks, the drill rig, and its peripheral equipment, there was our equipment. MHI had brought in every piece of lethal hardware in its inventory. We'd had to build in an ammo bunker for all the ammo. There were tanks of prepared napalm to refill the flamethrowers and hunters to run it up to the flamethrower teams. Pre-stocked ammo supplies and pre-loaded magazines. Cases and cases of grenades, laws, RPGs, and Carl Gustavs. We'd put in extra orders for all the firepower we were planning on throwing. If this wasn't a MAVA, we were going to lose a lot of money on this deal. If it was, then the lowest estimate we'd gotten from the Puff Adjuster was astronomical. Even with all the costs of the operation, we'd make bank. Our building was part of a regular block of identical prefab concrete warehouses. Each was 400 feet long, 150 feet wide, with a broad boulevard between them, running north and south, and narrower streets, still big enough to take 2 tractor trailers, running east-west. The doors were heavily reinforced to prevent burglary, and the only windows were near the high roofs. Counting the thick, precast concrete walls, they were virtually impregnable. But virtually wasn't good enough. Milo had been given a construction crew, the company checkbook, and told to make this place into a fortress. We still didn't know what the MAVA was going to throw at us, but Milo had reinforced everything just in case. The already thick floors had been built up with rebar-reinforced concrete everywhere but our drill hole. It would take Kifo worms a while to batter their way through that. We'd set up double-height jersey wall blockades on the broad boulevards, angled to push anything that couldn't climb them into the narrower streets. That was where we'd also set up most of our firepower. The premise was that any attackers would be pushed into the kill zone. The kill zone was littered with claymores and other explosives. It was going to get hot in there. We'd ensured that the other warehouses didn't have anything that would detonate from the heat, and the concrete walls were pretty resistant. The walls were high enough that even a Shuggoth would need some time to slither over them, and they were backstopped by more stacked jersey walls to prevent pressure pushing them over. Hopefully they'd hold. But the MAVA would probably summon some ghouls, wights, vampires, what have you. They could climb right over the things. They could climb the walls of the freaking warehouse. Vampires and whites could climb the other warehouses and make the jump across the narrower sections. Earl promised that he had some special secret weapon which would take care of any undead, but we'd see. At 6 points up along the long sides of the warehouse, we had belt-fed guns mounted. 2 M2 50 caliber Mod Deuces and 4 M60 Pigs in .308. They were going to be putting plunging fire onto anything that got onto the boulevards. 2 of the M2s were mounted at each end of the building and could swivel to cover the narrow streets. If the claymores, napalm bombs, and other explosives didn't do the trick, my deuce was the gift that just kept giving. Getting in and out of the warehouse was the tough part. We'd seriously bunkered up. The fastest way out was from the roof. Which was why Life Lift was also on standby. We were going to take casualties, and would be carrying them out by helicopter. Nearly every MHI employee in the country was here. I saw people I had not seen since training. Either the MCB did not know what we were up to, or if some figured it out, they were smart enough not to alert their superiors. We hadn't been shut down yet. Everything was ready. Earl got on the warehouse intercom.
Start the drill.
For hours, the priests had taken turns blessing the water. We needed the holy water not only for the drill mud, but for mixing with the stuff coming out of the drill. We'd already noticed effects just from the Mava's shell. Get near the discharge, and you were immediately assaulted by the presence of evil. How the last drill crew had managed was the real question. It probably hadn't been as bad when the creature was asleep. This was bad, but the Mava's internal essence was supposed to be worse. Of course, we were mixing it with holy water, which was unquestionably dropping the pure evil level. When it was fully diluted, you didn't get any feel off of it at all. Just the initial stuff coming out of the hole. Father Coughlin, I said, walking over to my old confessor who was standing by the edge of one of the tanks. Bit easier with help?
Do you know who that is?
Father Coughlin asked quietly, gesturing with his chin at Father Madruga. That priest? I said. He's one of the people my boss called, Father Madruga.
Monsignor Madruga. He's Cuban, Father Coughlin said. He was a priest when Castro took over. He had a way out, but stayed behind to minister his flock. He was horribly tortured by Castro's people, but refused to renounce his faith. Led an underground railroad to get people out until there was a definite kill order sent down against him. His junior priests and the surviving nuns had to more or less drag him to the boat. He literally had to be tied up to keep from returning. The scars are from where some of Castro's torturers tossed gas in his face, set it on fire.
Jesus. It's worth noting that humans can be as bad as the things hunters fight.
Watch your tongue, Chad, Father Coughlin said. Only in places and times where one is truly tested can you be sure of a person's faith. For the rest, it's just words, to be believed or not. Only God knows the human heart. Monsignor Madruga is what every priest should aspire to be, as strong in faith as any human being on earth, assured of sainthood, except he's apparently disappeared from the face of the earth for the last few years and no one has known where he's been.
Ah, I said, nodding. In that case, very glad he's here.
Time to suit up, Earl radioed. They're through the shell and in the Mava's guts.
We'd been told that it would be about several minutes before anything that they were drilling through reached the surface, so they had time to suit up before the Mava gunk reached the drill site. Now we find out if this is what we think it is, I said. See you when we're done, Father.
God will prevail this night, Chad, Father Coughlin said, making the sign of the cross. Have faith.
I headed for the drill rig. Since this was my brilliant idea, I was in charge of the crew and the hunters around the hole. I wanted to be close when we broke through the shell to see just how bad this stuff was, and be in the circuit when we figured out what the Tibetans meant by servants.
We're through, Franson said. Our geologist was all duded up in a silver suit. And we're getting some really weird effects already. Stuff that wasn't in the last drill.
Define weird, I said.
Drill head is in soft material, but heating up way more than it should,
Al Gordon said.
And we're getting spurious movement, like there's something hitting the string from the side.
He pointed at the pipe that was the drill string, and you could see it was jumping like something was hitting it. Is it going to break? I asked.
Don't know. 1,000 holes and I've never seen anything like that. Could crimp, yeah. But so far it's holding. Just weird. Not sure what's causing it. Could be something in the material we're drilling has movement. Could be something in between.
What the hell? One of the drillers yelled. We got foam coming out!
The mud, a mixture of various non-toxic chemicals, bentonite, and holy water, was now foaming. Smelled like...
Kifo worm! Get your respirators on!
I shouted. Then I got on my radio.
This is Iron Hand at the drill. That's Kifo juice coming up. I can smell it. Incoming Kifo!
It's not gonna be able to fit through the bore, is it?
Al asked. Hell if I know.
The borehole was about 14 inches in diameter. The string took up 6 inches of that, more or less in the middle.